Inspirational women are increasingly popular in the news and media, but many go unheard and their stories are never told. Women to Watch with Susan Rocco captures the stories of many women who truly make a difference. Women to Watch is the vehicle for developing new leaders, encouraging younger generations, and in building self-esteem for future entrepreneurs.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Women to Watch here on WWDB Talk 860. My name is Sue Rocco, and I'm happy to be back on this beautiful Monday with my usual cohort, Dr. Beth Dupree, who is joining us from Holy Redeemer Hospital. She is on the phone with us. I also have my daughter in the studio, which I'm thrilled to have, so she gets to see what mom does outside of the house. And our guest today is Lenore Vassell. And Lenore is the founder and CEO of The Torch, which is an online emergency information organizer, which really helps prepare families for sudden situations. So welcome to the show, everyone. Welcome to the show, Lenore. Beth, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can
okay.
You hear me?
Good, good, good. There you are. I was having a little technical issues finding everyone. How are you today?
I am good.
Listen, we're going to start with you, and I want to find out about your weekend and the wonderful retreat that you held talking about the topic of ethics and healthcare.
Well, my week last week was filled with multiple, obviously very, I would say, cognitive stimulation. My brain was kind of working overtime with all of the different seminars that I was at. I spent 2 days in Maryland doing a leadership and legacy course on ethics and healthcare, and obviously I work for a Catholic health institution at Holy Redeemer, and every different organization has its own ethics, and it was just a very thought-provoking time. And to go from there to my office hours to, you know, at noon on Friday, beginning a 3-day very intensive retreat called A Journey of Hope with women who are all living with stage 4 breast cancer. And so it's there are no coincidences that our guest today is has a company that is something that I was, you know, having these very difficult conversations with these women who are living with stage 4 breast cancer. And I hadn't looked at the notes till I got home last night to even see who the guest was. That's how crazy my week was. And it was kind of like, I was like, okay, this is totally divine providence, because why would this topic be on Monday after I spent the weekend helping these women navigate their journey with breast cancer? And, you know, stage 4 breast cancer means that breast cancer has spread beyond the breast into other organs. And it is not considered a curable disease. It is considered a chronic disease, although there are many individuals who are, I say that they get to NED, which is our acronym for No Evidence of Disease. So I tell everyone with stage 4 cancer that you want to get to NED, because NED's a really good place to be. And for these women, it was very transformative this weekend. My sister Sue is in from Australia. She's an amazing clinical social psychologist who also does a lot of healing modalities. And Sue and I led the retreat and taught many different techniques for stress reduction, you know, using meditation and yoga and laughter yoga. And we did several projects that were designed to stimulate those conversations. And then we actually had those very tough conversations about, you know, does your family know what you want when you're no longer here? Does everybody in your household know where things are and who you want your very valuable items to go? And it takes the business that we're going to talk about today with Torch to a whole different level, because it's not just about, you know, with women dealing with a potentially life, you know, the life-threatening disease, it makes you ask all those really difficult questions of yourself. And if you don't write down the answers for anyone to have, no one's really going to know what you want them to know about your, you know, about, first of all, your personal life and the practical things of day-to-day living. But we even went way farther than that, going into you know, writing down and creating a memoryship of events in your life that you want your children to know what you thought about it and how you remember it. And it was really powerful for me because, you know, I'm very healthy. I'm not dealing with cancer. But it made me look at things in my life and begin that journal, which I will, you know, have for my children someday to look at and to read. Because the farther we get away from certain events, the harder it is to remember them. And so it was a really amazing weekend. We were at O'Connellith Spiritual Center, which is in Northeast Philly. It's a beautiful facility that's it was partnered with the family, the trainers, and the Sisters of Mercy. And it was just an absolutely beautiful weekend, a beautiful experience. And I actually think that, you know, after our discussion today, this this whole concept of passing the torch is it's something so beautiful from a, you know, with my patients, making sure that they all are aware that there is something like this out there so that, you know, not they don't feel like they're leaving information just kind of out in the air for someone to go find. They can actually, you know, have that control. And when you're going through a disease that you lose control of, being able to control something is really an awesome opportunity. And I think this is going to give them potentially an opportunity to regain some control.
Beth, do you have plans to hold another retreat like that again?
We run these retreats usually twice a year. We're hoping to get more funding to be able to do it four times a year. We do them for newly diagnosed patients. We do them for our young survivors. And we also, we think that our support group called MetaFriends, our patients that are living with breast cancer as a chronic disease, are those individuals who really, really need these intensive weekends, because healing is something that happens, you know, at a soul's level. And you can't, you know, a lot of patients aren't receiving that within current health systems. And I think you know by now from getting to know me that, you know, with what I do with the Healing Consciousness Foundation and what we offer at Holy Redeemer, we're really giving patients much more of that personal patient experience and trying to create that healing opportunity for them from the diagnosis. But I was, you know, given the opportunity to see how other doctors treat their patients and how discounted patients feel when they're not being heard. And so it really was a very thought-provoking weekend for me. I'm still trying to process it all, and it takes a while. And I have to say, I learn so much every time that we facilitate one of these retreats. And I, you know, the women leave so thankful that I gave my weekend to be with them. And what's really the blessing and the gift is that they chose to give me these gifts so that I can, you know, go forward and try to help more women and men and, you know, everyone dealing with, you know, life-altering situations. So it was really an amazing experience. And it's something that that's my soul's work. I'll have to share with you my picture that I did in one of the sessions. It was amazing. We took a word, and everybody had to choose a word, and I chose the word passion, because that was something that kept coming up this week in my other, you know, my other spiritual work at Bon Secours. And you erase the word, but before you erase it, you draw kind of a blobby circle around it, you know. And my word passion ended up turning into the medical caduceus, which was planted in the earth with the snakes going down into the roots of a plant and coming up through with all of the colors of the energy chakras into a pair of hands, you know, holding this beautiful light, which is really where, you know, I know that my passion is healing. I chose to be a surgeon because I think that was the easiest route there. But my passion is really in healing and making sure that we provide access to our patients, because everybody needs healing at some level. And so to really kind of be able to focus that laser beam of mine was pretty cool. And to have these women, these amazing, amazing women, be my teachers this weekend, I am forever blessed to have had them in my life and to continue to have them in my life. So it was pretty awesome.
That's so great, Beth. And you know how I feel about you. Those women are lucky to have you, you know, and the work that you do, it's so, so deeply from your heart. I just, you know, I can't say enough about the work that you do. And of course, how lucky I am to have you, you know, contributing to the show every week. For the listeners, real quick, I want to give our call-in number in case someone's listening and would like to call in with questions for either Dr. Dupree or Lenore. Our call-in number is 888-329-3306. And I'd like to welcome to the show now Lenore Vassell, who I mentioned is the founder and CEO of The Torch. And The Torch is an online emergency information organizer, which is just a tremendous tool for families to use so that they're prepared for any, you know, sudden situations that come up. Lenore, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Sue. Hi, Beth. So nice to speak with you as well.
Terrific. I'm happy to hear your voice and been looking forward to...
So awesome.
Yes.
So awesome having you on the show.
Thank you. Well, I am so inspired by both of you as to, like, what you do for women and inspiring them to be in leadership roles. I told you once before, two of my favorite guests were Sally Krawcheck and Deanne Wingate.
Yes.
Sally, I've followed for years, and Deanne is a close friend of mine. And so thank you for highlighting women the way you do. It is just amazing. And Beth, I've had so many friends and family who have won the fight with cancer because of people like you. So I want to personally thank you, and you are my hero.
Well, thank you. And I love how you took your idea and turned it into a reality. And that's such a beautiful thing to see. And I love people following. And clearly it was something you were passionate about. And I have to ask you, is your Twitter picture, are you sitting at the top of Machu Picchu?
I am.
That is on my bucket list, and I bought some backpacks from Cranolith yesterday because they were made from the nuns. They were made in Peru.
Uh huh.
It's absolutely on my bucket list to be sitting there just like you were, and I was thinking I could Photoshop my blonde hair into that picture and maybe have a new Twitter picture. So it was awesome.
Oh, go ahead.
Beth, I have no doubt you'll get there. You will get there.
Maybe we could broadcast the show from there, Susan. What do you think?
That would be awesome.
That would be fabulous. Yeah, it was one of my bucket lists as well. And I hiked the Inca Trail with 8 other of my very, very closest friends, my sister, my best friend. We did it. It was hard. It was really hard.
I can imagine.
But when you get to the Sun's Gate, it was so cathartic. Everybody got tears in their eyes.
Oh, you know, I have a cousin who did it as well, and she was working with a foundation, and they performed a concert there. And I know that it's an experience she'll never forget. So, Lenore, let's get into your backstory. I'm anxious to talk about a little bit about your background, of course, before we talk about The Torch and all the services that you offer. I love personally that you mentioned your Italian and Greek family, because, as you know, I married into an Italian family, and my favorite movie of all time is My Big Fat Greek Wedding. And so that I picture all of that when I think of you. And my daughter's with me today in the studio, and she is one of the all-time best interpreters, I guess, of My Big Fat Greek Wedding. She can absolutely mimic every line from the movie. And I want to know, is that, you know, when I think about that movie and your Italian heritage, is that how you grew up?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. I love that movie. And every time I see it, we laugh. Remember in the movie there was, I think everybody was named Nick.
Yes.
And Nicola. Well, I have cousins where there's Carl, and Carl Sr., Carl, you know, so, and we joke, you know, it's old Carl, young Carl, skinny Carl, fat Carl. You know, it's because we can't remember which Carl we were talking about.
That's so funny.
But you know, and the food, everything is all about the food. And every meal we spend talking about what we're going to eat for the next meal.
Absolutely.
And everything we make takes so long to make. We have every person in our family has their like specialty of like what they make, and the more complicated the better. Because I think we measure love in food. And aww. So if we cook for you and if we make something really complicated, dehydrated, that's the love that we put into the food. And so the more complicated, the more you love them.
I love that. And sometimes, you know, we do the same thing. We prepare the day before all the meals for the next day. And my only complaint is that it takes a lot of preparation and a lot of love, and then it's over so quickly. I'm trying to teach my Italian in-laws to eat slower. Slow down.
Well, it's true. But what we've learned to do is we enjoy the process and the preparation. So my parents, they still live in Pennsylvania, and I don't get to see them as often. So when we do have a holiday, it's about going to the market with them, picking out, you know, all of the, you know, doing all the shopping, being in the kitchen, cooking, putting everything together. And so it's the time in the shopping and the preparation. Mm-hmm. That we really enjoy. That, yes, you're right, when you eat it, it's like it's gone, but all of the time that you put into it is what we really enjoy.
Yeah, that's a wonderful
ceremony of the cooking.
That's
the
right.
Ceremony, don't you think? That,
yes.
That,
yes.
The whole build up to it. The, you know, we did it yesterday for Father's Day. You know, with the cooking of the ribs and the smoking of the brisket and all that stuff. It's like it's that whole process that makes it so much fun because you're sharing it with your family.
Right. Well, we laugh because in our family, we have a big family, and we all love food. And anytime there's a holiday, everybody's asking, you know, who's making what, you know, what are we going to have? Who's shopping? Who's doing this? And there's all these questions flying around. And because I'm technical and I love spreadsheets, I think in a spreadsheet, I always create a spreadsheet. So I just recently, this past weekend, created the 4th of July spreadsheet.
It's already in the planning.
Yeah. Yes, it's who's bringing what and who's buying this and what are we eating Friday and Saturday and what's for breakfast and what's for lunch, and it's really funny. But it's all part of our ritual, like you said, and the celebration.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way to grow up. It really is. One of the things, Lenore, I wanted to ask you about was it seems to me from reading your background that you really were, from a young age, interested in the math and the science and the technology, which is wonderful, you know, to know at a young age where your interests lie. And, you know, rather than going to, a cheerleader camp, you went to a science camp. And I think that's fantastic. And I want to know what did you learn from those years at that camp that kind of helped you to build that confidence as a young girl in the technology field?
I joke that I was always good in math and science, but I think I was really good in them because I was terrible in English. So I can't spell. And so whenever I'd have to, like, read aloud or go in a spelling bee, I was like, oh, I just avoided those classes. But math and science, that came easier to me. Mm-hmm. And so I excelled there. So obviously I kind of gravitated to those types of classes. Well, when I was in high school, my parents, they were always very supportive of me doing, you know, anything that was going to further my education and anything that was educational. And so they found this science camp. And originally, because, you know, you're in high school at that time, and they were like, oh, we found this science camp. We thought you would like it. You know, we think that you should go, because they always wanted me to do at least one thing educational during the summertime. And I was like, oh, science camp. Oh, you know, what are people going to think, you know? And so, but when I got there, okay, so I did my first, you know, before I went to science camp, I was a little hesitant. But when I got there, I have to say I was so enthralled by it. It was 2 full weeks. We're at a college campus. So here I was, you know, in high school at a college campus, which I thought was the coolest thing. And it was all lab work. No tests, no reading, just, you know, we were in a physics lab studying wave pools. We were in an astronomy lab, because we had classes at night, where we were up in a tower looking at the stars and learning all about astronomy. We had a biology lab where we actually dissected some animals and we learned all about, you know, how the body works. And I mean, it was just a phenomenal experience to attend something like that.
I learned computer programming. Oh, did you?
Yeah. Yes.
Where was the camp? Because I went to Camp Canadian, and I was, you know, riding horses and playing, you know, tennis and doing fencing and swimming. So fabulous camp in Pennsylvania.
It was in New Jersey at Trenton State College.
Get out of here. Where'd you grow up?
Yes.
What part?
I grew up in, it was called Titusville. It was right near Washington Crossing, about 3 miles from New Hope.
Okay, so I ride past there almost every weekend on my bike. We cross over the Washington Crossing Bridge on the canal, and I ride right through Titusville because it's so beautiful.
Oh, my God. Well, it's a good thing you go on your bike and not your car, because every time I try to go over there in my car, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my rear-view mirrors because it's such a narrow bridge.
That is a treacherous one. Oh, so you were in Titusville. How beautiful.
Yes, we lived one block off the river, right down there, and so I went to Trenton State. It was at Trenton State College.
Wow.
And I went to Summers.
I got to take you there if you haven't been to Titusville. It's a beautiful town. It sits way up top of the Delaware, and it looks down, but it floods, I think, too, still, though.
Yeah, I would love to see it. I've been to Princeton, but I haven't been to any other area near there.
Well, full disclosure, Beth, full disclosure, I really did enjoy the science, but I also enjoyed the fact that there was baseball camp, football camp, and basketball camp, and all those boys would eat in the same lunchroom as us.
There you go.
And, because science camp boys and soccer camp boys look a little different. And full disclosure.
Okay, so we know where your heart was. That's okay. I was guilty of the same. I played tennis in college, and I didn't mind the guys at training table coming in all sweaty after working out all day. So it's okay. I was a science nerd, and I can't spell either, so I totally feel your pain.
Oh, that's so funny, really. Okay, good. So I don't feel so bad.
And the good thing is, like with texting, my kids, they sometimes think it's just, you know, the autocorrect or whatever, but I really just can't spell. That's the bottom line. So
we always have that out, don't we? That darn autospeller. You know, Lenore, one of the questions I had for you, and it makes sense to ask you now, is what are some of the things you would like to see the schools doing to help encourage more young women to go into the STEM field?
Well, these types of camps are fabulous. They really, really are fabulous. In fact, there's one in Charlotte that just started up recently that I'm going to be speaking at this summer. But there's also these code academies that are coming up that I would love to see in the schools, you know, teaching kids how to code. It's not as hard as it used to be years ago when I was there, because there's so many of these like code generators that make it really simple.
Mm-hmm.
And so having camps that make it fun and cool, having these code, learning to code, but also what I wish that I had was just like entrepreneurial type classes very, very early on.
Mm.
Showing children and young girls, it doesn't girls and boys, how to turn an idea into a business.
Right.
And I just think that is so key, because, you know, I'm learning this in my second career here.
Right.
And if I had learned it early on, I just think it would have been phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that those types of lessons and skills and tools are valuable no matter what your career is.
Yes.
You know, to really just kind of think for yourself and come up with strategies when you have a creative idea. I want to get right into your background and talk about the years that you worked in technology prior to your launching the Torch. You worked for Bank of America, MTV Networks. You worked for Verizon and Accenture. These are all big name companies. And if I'm correct, you worked in operations. I wanted to know what it was that kind of helped you navigate the corporate politics during those years.
Well, when I I'm going to start real quick with what I was in college. I was an accounting major in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to be an accountant. And so my way of turning the accounting major into a career without being an accountant was by joining Accenture, which was then called Anderson Consulting, and implementing accounting systems. And so I was a consultant able to go in, assess a situation, figure out what the problems are, and then apply technology to it. And it was typically in finance and accounting. And from there, going into different companies and being able to apply technology regardless of the industry. So, you know, I started out doing work for the federal government. I moved into telecommunications at Verizon. And then from there, I went to MTV, which was, you know, media and entertainment,
mm-hmm.
And then to Bank of America. And quite often I was asked the question, you know, well, you know, you're a telecommunications person. What do you know about, you know, MTV? And my answer was really, no, I am a problem solver. I build technology to solve problems. And so you are the expert in the business. Let me work with you to identify the problem and use technology to solve your problem. And so it really didn't matter what industry I was in. It was all about solving the problems and using technology to do it. And I've always had the most tremendous mentors in every single company that I worked for that helped me get by the politics by focusing on the problem and the solution and delivering value and not getting caught up with all the other things that were going on in the company. It didn't matter what industry you were in, you're always going to have the corporate politics. But I had this one advisor, and he was actually a boss at the time when I was in Verizon, who told me, he's like, wear the white hat. And what he meant by that is always do the right thing and do the thing that's the one that's not always the easiest. And, you know, it's really easy to go in and complain and say, oh, this department isn't doing their job and, you know, we're doing this and we're doing that. And he would say, no, he's like, go in and present the solution. Don't be talking about the problem. Talk about the solution. And that's how I've been successful through all my different careers, by always remembering his name was Harry Arts, and I will never forget him. He was such a great mentor, by wearing the white hat and always going in and solving the problems.
That's great advice, you know, and it really speaks to being positive, right, in the workplace. I love that. Don't focus on the problems, but say, this is how we're going to make things better.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you inspire and motivate the people that worked for you when it came time to implementing new systems? You know, technology is so incredibly fast-paced, and sometimes I think, you know, people get, you know, they adjust to a new system, and it's time to change it and do something different.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And when you're in technology, it can be very thankless. Because the software is never fast enough. It's never doing what you want it to do. And so quite often you pick up the phone and you call your tech people and you're yelling at them, why doesn't do this? I wanted to do that.
Right.
And my teams, they would get beat up sometimes by our customers. And what I would always tell them is you have to embrace the critics. You have to listen to what they're saying and not take it personally. But what they're saying is there's an ounce of information in there that could make whatever we're doing better. And so when you take out all of the, you know, personalization and the anger and the emotion, what are they saying, and how can we take that information, apply it to our system or our process, and make it better? And when you do that, every time you get maybe yelled at or have a criticism, you can strip away everything and say, how can I learn from this and do better for what I'm the product that I'm producing.
Right, right.
You are living the four agreements. My gosh, it's beautiful. but not taking it personally and saying, how do I take this information and create an opportunity for improvement? And, those are the people that succeed in life. The people that get hung up and hang in the muck, they
right.
never go anywhere because you can't get past the feeling sorry for yourself or being hurt. You just... you kick the mud off your shoes and keep walking.
Right.
Exactly. Shrug your shoulders, keep walking, keep getting there. That's what you have to do. And quite honestly, your critics are your best resource because the people that are telling you you're doing everything great, that's wonderful, but you're not going to get better. And
right.
so the people that are telling you how you can improve, that's how you can make yourself better. It hurts. It definitely hurts.
Right. That's true.
Every time you hear one, you say, ow. But then you have to move on and get to the next step.
Exactly. Listen, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor. And when we come back, I want to talk about your speaking and your interest in emotional intelligence. We'll be right back.
There are 365 days to schedule a mammogram. Today is as good as any. Holy Redeemer Breast Care makes it easy. We offer the latest technology, like 3D mammography and automated breast ultrasound that help find cancers in dense breast tissue. Plus, our same-day readings mean same-day peace of mind. Make today the day you schedule a mammogram. It's easy to request an appointment online at holyredeemer.com/mammogram.
Welcome back, everyone, to this week of Women to Watch here on WWDB Talk 860. My name is Sue Rocco, and I'm joined today by, of course, our co-host, Dr. Beth Dupree, who's calling in from Holy Redeemer Hospital. And we have as a guest today Lenore Vassell. Lenore is the founder and CEO of The Torch, which is an online information organizer. And we're going to learn a lot more about that in a few minutes. But one of the things that was interesting to me, Lenore, was your interest in emotional intelligence. I don't know that a lot of people know what that is and why it's important. So I'd love for you to talk for a few minutes about your thoughts.
Oh, sure. Well, I got the privilege and opportunity 5 years back to speak at in a leadership class. A friend of mine was teaching at Georgia Tech called True North, and it was all about authentic leadership. And there was a section about emotional intelligence and self-awareness, self-discipline, and self-motivation. And dealing with other people, and so it's self-control as well as social interactions. And he asked me to come and speak on the topic when he taught this class, and we did this for 5 years, because together we were working. I was the president of my homeowners association, and if anybody's ever been on a homeowners association, it is the most difficult job and thankless job.
Thankless,
thankless. And we had a really difficult situation where we had. A leaking building. We had mold. We had lawyers that were attacking me, both professionally and personally. And we had to wage a litigation against our developer. And I was dealing with all of these really, really difficult personalities. And he watched me in the way I dealt with them, and said, I really want you to come and talk to my class about emotional intelligence, because the way he saw me deal with these very difficult personalities, he wanted the students to understand those types of skill sets. And so it's mostly a lot about what I had talked about before. Active listening to what people say, not taking things personally, self-control in making sure, when you're a leader and somebody wants to deliver you bad news, if you're the type of person that blows up that yells whenever something goes wrong, nobody's going to tell you that something's going to go wrong.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And they're
going to
hide it from you until it's really, really bad. But if you're the type of person where people feel like they can bring bad news to you and that you're not going to overreact, but that you're going to react with the appropriate level of, you know, emotion, then people will bring bad news to you and you will know ahead of time before it gets escalated.
Right.
And so those were the types of things we talked about, you know, in the classroom about how these students, when, you know, they get out, actually they, a lot of them are graduate students, when they get back into the work world, as to how to navigate the politics and using emotional intelligence to differentiate themselves as leaders, because IQ will get you so far, but EQ, which is emotional intelligence, will help you get even farther as a leader, because you can interact with people much better than if you have just IQ.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially in business, because you want the, you know, your colleagues to be able to come to you often. You know, communication for business is critical. And if you're not approachable, you know, things are going to go by the wayside.
Yes.
Yeah. Lenore, let's jump right into the, here's what I would like to know. What precipitated your decision to start your own company? Was there an experience or something that happened that you said, you know, this is needed and I'm going to take care of it?
Well, I always had this itch to create a company. I just never had an idea that I thought was viable. And when I was on vacation with my sister, we were in Ibiza, Spain at this thing called Bikini Boot Camp. And it was a adventure, healthy vacation for women, where you wake up in the morning and you eat healthy food and you do yoga and you meditate. And in the afternoon, you have an adventure. And that day, we hiked these crazy cliffs, and they were actually quite treacherous and dangerous. And that night, one of the women said, you know, if something happened to us today, because it was really dangerous what we did, would anyone know how to navigate your life? And so after calling her a buzzkill, I was the first one to speak up. And I said, well, you know, my financial advisor, you know, told me that I needed to have a will and, you know, estate planning documents because I live alone. And I looked at my sister and I said, Christina, you have all, you know, my stuff. You would know what to do if something ever happened to me. She looked at me and said, Lenore, you gave that to me 5 years ago. I have no idea where it is. And even if I did, I wouldn't know what to do with it. And she's like, I don't know the name of your doctor. I don't know where you keep your dog when we go on vacation. She's like, I don't even have a key to your house. No, I couldn't navigate your life. And I was really, I was taken aback because I thought I was a very responsible, you know, organized person. And I realized that, you know, we hadn't really talked about it. And I threw her some papers a couple of years ago, but that was about it. And when I talked to the other women on the trip, I thought, all right, well, I'm single and we're just irresponsible. Everybody else has this together. And they were married with children. But they had the same response. They were like, no, my husband knows everything, or I know everything. My husband would be lost. You know, one was an entrepreneur. She said, I have clients booked a year in advance. No one would know how to handle them. And so they all looked at me and said, you're a technology executive. You build software. Go build an app for that. And so I did. I started researching it. And you know, there's other solutions out there, but there just wasn't one that I liked. And so I took my experience and said, all right, let me build something that I think that I would use and that my family would use.
And what were you doing at the time, Lenore? Were you working for a company?
I was working at Bank of America.
At Bank of America.
Yeah, I was a technology and operations executive at Bank of America.
Right. And what year was that?
That was in 2011.
Okay. So what was the very first thing you did? You know, it's funny. We have conversations all the time, and people will say, I bet there's an app for that, or we should build an app for that. You know, it's kind of a broad statement. What did you do? Who did you contact first?
Google.
Okay. That's a good company. I've heard of them.
And I Googled and I said, all right, who's done this? Who hasn't done this? What are the competitors out there? And then when I decided to start doing it, the first thing I did was a competitive analysis. That was the, first thing. But then what I started doing is creating a prototype. Mm-hmm. And I started mocking up different screens and putting together kind of a high-level business plan. And the first thing I did was a friend of mine connected me with an advisor who was a very successful entrepreneur who had just his software was just purchased by, I think it was purchased by Google or Amazon. It was purchased by Amazon. And so I pitched it to him, and I hadn't really done much. He said, what you need to do is you need to sell it before you build it. And that was a concept that was very foreign to me. And he said, what you need to do is you need to just build a sexy little prototype. And he goes, then go out and try to sell it and see if anybody will buy it. Because don't spend all your time building this product that nobody's going to buy. And it was very interesting because he said, have you put this in front of financial advisors? Did you put it, did you ask any questions or get it in front of them? And I said, no, but there's this estate planning conference that I'm going to attend. And he said, attend? What are you going to do when you attend? And I said, oh, well, I'm going to network and I'm going to talk to people. And he goes, no, you're not. He goes, you're going to go buy a table and you're going to sell your product at a table. And I was like, but I don't have a product. And he said, no. He's like, you're gonna build a prototype and go ask their opinion and see if they would buy it. And so I did. I did it in 4 or 6 weeks. I built a little prototype. I made a logo. I got my website and I went and I tried to sell it at an estate planning conference.
Yeah, that's what a great idea to really find out first before you put, time and effort mm-hmm. and sweat and tears into a business, whether there is an interest there.
Right.
Yeah. As you mentioned, Lenore, there are other options out there all around surrounding this topic. So what is it that you're doing to promote the torch and gain visibility in the competitive field that there is?
Well, there's two other options. The biggest competitor we have, quite honestly, is the option to do nothing. And I've seen time and again where, and I think Beth, you'll totally understand this analogy. The torch is a vitamin. And it's something that's going to prevent something bad from happening in the future. And so while everyone agrees that it's important, it's not urgent. And so they tend to put it off.
Mm. It became very obvious to me yesterday that women who have been faced with, a terminal, a disease that will most likely prematurely end their life, still have to be pushed to mm-hmm. have those difficult conversations and to have those things. And, I have got a spreadsheet for my information. I have an account with you, by the way. I did it in 5 minutes before the show started. So I have a Torch account now, and I am going to get the Lifetime one because that is totally affordable. And I think about this, what happens? I travel a lot. What happens if something happens to me tomorrow, which, none of us are guaranteed to wake up, or I could have an accident and be unconscious? Mm-hmm. And, I like the whole idea. You can give it as a gift. So I've got 5 sisters that might be getting this for Christmas because one of us becomes responsible for the other. And, even though we're married, it doesn't guarantee that your spouse is going to be, you just don't know. And, Susan knows my brother was killed when I was 17. He was killed by a drunk driver. And I remember, even though he was married, just the chaos of trying to piece things together because you can't ask questions when somebody's not able to answer them.
Right.
You have all the questions, but, to me, the torch is like the answer. It gives you a kind of a succinct place to put it. And, It's, I mean, after my entire last 5 days, looking at the conversations that I've been having, it's something that, you know, to me, it is like taking a vitamin, and I'd rather take the vitamin now than have my sons, my boys, or my family be the ones that are on the receiving end of not enough information. And I have a spreadsheet, but it's locked in my computer, password protected. You know what I mean? So it's like, who would ever know to go there?
Oh, that's
right. Well, where to find it.
And so the difference, so option number one, big competitor number one is doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Competitor number two is there's other products out there that position themselves as an online safe deposit box where you scan all your documents, you put all your passwords, you link all your accounts, your financial accounts, and it becomes this, you know, one place where all of your details are. And while that is good for some people, it's very time-consuming. And what I found from an emotional intelligence perspective is people don't necessarily want to share that level of detail with anybody, even their spouse, and not with a company that they don't know or trust. And so so where the torch is different is the torch is just instructions. I call it the map, not the treasure. It's who to call, where to look, and what to do in an emergency. So it's, here's the name of my doctor. I don't need to give you the list of all the medications I'm on. My doctor knows. Here's the name of my financial advisor. I'm not going to give you the passwords to my bank accounts, but my financial advisor knows where they are. You know, I have a will, and here's where you can find it. But I don't want to show it to you right now because you don't need to know who I'm leaving my money to. And so the torch is more of instructions than it is all of the details. So, Beth, for you, it's, oh, by the way, I have a spreadsheet. Here's where to go look.
Yep.
And it's,
but
it's,
that makes it, but this is so, it makes, it's so intuitive and it makes so much sense. And for those people in the world that go along every day and think that things don't happen, believe me, things happen. And, you know, another concern that I have is my mom has Alzheimer's. She'll be 90 next week. But did she remember to make a list of everything when she could remember? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we found a shoebox full of food, listen to me, it's probably because I'm hungry, a shoebox full of money in just sitting in a closet in the house when we moved our parents to a retirement community because my mom had put money there over the years because she did catering. But nobody knew it was there. And could you imagine if we didn't find it and it just sat there until the next owners came in and cha-ching, they got a nice little bonus. But, you know, you have to do this when you think about it. And it's very hard for people to think that they could ever be in a situation where they don't have control of their life or of their decisions. But I see it every day, and I think it's a great idea.
Well, thank you. And back to the emotional intelligence piece of it, what I found and what I tell people to do is, so let's say you want your sisters to fill out the torch. If you call them up and you say, hey, you know, I saw this great, you know, app and I want you to fill this out for me because I need this information, or if you, you know, want your parents to do it, they're gonna get defensive. Why do you want to know? You know, what do you think is going to happen to me? You know, that type of thing. But if you approach it by filling it out yourself and saying, you know what, I spent the time and I put my information in here, and now I want to share this with you. So you pass the torch to your parents or pass the torch to your sister and say, can we have a conversation? Because if anything ever happened to me, I'd want you to know this level of information. And remembering, again, no details, just instructions. That gives the sense of trust, and where you are opening your kimono to say, hey, I'm sharing this information with you. And then they feel, okay, she's done it. She's, you know, she is trusting this information to me. I should really do this and reciprocate. Because that's the way those conversations, because they are difficult and they are taboo, need to be had in preparing, especially when you're healthy.
It's a little
different when you're not.
It's like preventive medicine right here.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And, you know, what a great way to approach it for your parents. You know, I find that it's such a difficult conversation to have with parents, let alone siblings, because, you know, you're kind of the, and Beth and I have spoken about this, all of a sudden the roles are switched. You know, you were raised and you grew up and your parents were caring for you. And then all of a sudden one day, it just seems to happen overnight, your concern is for them. And they don't want to be viewed as, number one, you know, kind of facing, you know, the inevitable end of life. It's a hard subject. But they're often not accepting of this type of suggestion, I guess, coming from you. And so to do, I love the idea, Lenore, that you said about, you know, filling it out yourself and then just sharing it with them. Mm-hmm. That'll spark the idea. What a great idea. You know, I would love for my children to have this information as well.
And the other thing, when you had asked me how we're getting the word out, is we're working with financial advisory firms, also with some hospitals, and we even have one employer, but mainly with financial advisors, because they're the ones that actually, encourage their clients to do these types of things. And so what they've been doing it is buying it as a gift for their clients and helping their clients walk through it. And reminding them to do it and putting it as part of their kind of to-do list when they're working with their financial advisors. So while we, you know, go directly to the public, we also go through financial advisory, estate attorneys, employers, anybody who or businesses that value this type of information and encourage it as part of their communications with their constituents.
Yeah.
Great idea. My next door neighbor is my financial planner, so Topper and Betty are going to get a little phone call from me when I get home. Besides the fact that we beat them, the Dupree's beat them in bocce yesterday, now I will have to, educate him about a tool that he can use in his professional corporation. So it's
Yeah. Well, and one of the other things that it's a feature we're getting ready to roll out before the end of the year, I'll say, is called an executor toolkit. And what this is where we're talking as, you know, planning as being the vitamin. There also comes the acute care. So if we put it into the medical terms, Beth, when you were saying, okay, you know, now somebody, you know, has cancer or they've passed, what the executor toolkit will do is it'll walk the executor or the responsible person through exactly what it takes to be that person. A lot of times, like when my sister said to me, she goes, even if I had it, I wouldn't know what to do with it. A lot of people don't know what a healthcare power of attorney is and why they need it, or if they don't have it, what they have to do next. And so what the executor toolkit will do is teach the caregivers or executors how to do what they need to do, because it's very complicated, and it'll put it into plain English and give them a checklist and connect them with resources during a very, very difficult and devastating time.
Yeah, it takes away the guesswork, and that's like the gift that you give to your family is by not making them struggle through it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, Lenore, have your own parents, have they been receptive to it?
Oh, absolutely. My father, unfortunately, a couple of years ago while I was building the torch, he got bit by a bug, and it wasn't even someplace exotic. It was in Trenton, New Jersey. But he got bit by a bug, and he ended up getting viral encephalitis.
Oh my gosh.
It made his brain swell, and he got like temporary dementia for 2 months.
Wow.
And during that period of time, thank goodness he recovered 110%, which is amazing. He's Superman at his age to have recovered such a devastating disease. But during that period of time, I was asking my mother, I'm like, you know, did you pay bills? You know, did you do this? And she's like, your father does everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a real wake-up call for us.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just about death. It's about delegation, because there may be a time in your life where you can't do what you're doing, and somebody else needs to step in.
Right.
And if you haven't set up that person to run your life, it becomes extremely difficult, and it just adds stress onto a difficult time. And so they've gone through this, and my parents sat down and did it together, and my mother called me and thanked me, and she said, Lenore, she goes, you know, we've been married for 51 years, and, you know, I learned things that I didn't know, and thank you for doing this. And I've gotten those types of phone calls from many couples that have gone through it together where they really didn't know because it wasn't something that they talked about.
Right. You know, it's also it's actually empowering, isn't it, for one partner in a partnership to take on this task and have all this information. It really is empowering. It makes them, you know, kind of not have that anxiety about, gosh, you know, if something happens someday.
Right. Yeah. And because the torch is just instructions and it's not all the details,
right.
It's easier to talk about and it's not so overwhelming because mm-hmm. you're not diving into the nitty-gritties. It's just, look here, call this person. This is on auto pay. You know, this is automatically deposited. This isn't. You're going to have to look for a check and go take it to the bank. You know, those types of things, which is it's an easier conversation to have.
Yeah. We only have about a minute left, Lenore. I'd love to know if there's anything in your, you know, planning for the future. A lot of times entrepreneurs, once they get something up and running, they're on to their next idea. Is this something that, you know, you have in mind, or is all your efforts focused on the torch right now?
All my efforts are focused on the torch right now and really growing it, looking for strategic partnerships to really scale. And making it, I want to change the world. I want to make these conversations less taboo, mm-hmm. and I want to make it so that they're customary, they're easy, and you know, like Beth was saying, people aren't waiting till they get sick to have these conversations.
Right.
That it's something that's easy, and it's part of your normal routine. That we got to make sure we pass the torch.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's just so interesting to me, you know, I have Beth on the show every week. And so far, Beth, I think you'll agree, no matter the background of our guest, there always seems to be some tie-in. You know, there's always a commonality with life and wellness. And there's always something that's similar that we can talk about. And it's interesting to me, the two of you have to have these conversations, you know, these tough conversations. And they're so very important. And I think the more we do it, the easier it will get for people.
Our health is our greatest of wealth. It's connected to every single thing about being human and being alive. So there's no way that healthcare and wellness can't be connected to our guests. So
it's exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to meet you in person when I come to Charlotte. My son lives there.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Let's definitely do that.
Oh, terrific. Great idea.
And when you come to Pennsylvania, give us a call.
I will.
Thanks, Lenore. I so appreciate your being on the show. And for the listeners, you can go to thetorch.com to get more information on Lenore Vassell, founder and CEO of The Torch. Thanks, Beth. Thanks, Lenore. We'll see everyone next week.